What's up, Internet? Welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devinder Hardwar.
I'm Managing Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
This week, we're joined by Senior Writer Sam Rutherford. Hey, Sam.
Hey, how's it going?
Woo-hoo!
Going good. And also, Podcast Producer Ben Elman. Hey, Ben.
Hello.
Hello. It's a big Android week, I guess is what's happening. Samsung announced the Galaxy S25 Edge after teasing that months ago, which, I don't know, is kicking off the super thin phone era, which is something I feel like it's like 3D TVs. I don't know if it's actually going to be a thing. Is it going to be a thing we even remember after a certain point? Or will this be everything? Will every phone be super thin moving forward? We'll chat about that phone. We've got some accessibility news. There's some Android Show updates too from Google. We've got a bunch of other news to dive into, including like Apple CarPlay Ultra, which finally started rolling out on very expensive cars. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. Drop us an email at podcastengadget.com. We'd love your questions. We'll be answering one today about the Switch 2. And also, hey, your questions now could also roll into our Ask Engadget feature. So if you have a good question, maybe you'll be on multiple sides of Engadget. Send us your notes. Also, we typically do a live stream Thursday mornings. I think we're aiming for 10:30 a.m. Eastern now. Tune in on our YouTube channel. It's a fun time. We'll be showing off gadgets, as we will be for this stream. So if you're listening to the audio version, tune into the video. You can actually see Sam play with the new S25 Edge. So yeah, let's talk about that phone. It's a thinner Galaxy S25. We kind of like talked a bit about it when Samsung fully announced these phones, Sam, but what's the full skinny here?
I mean, it is what they said it is. It's a super thin phone. So, I mean, just the quick specs. It's 5.8 millimeters thick, which makes it one of the thinnest smartphones ever made. There's kind of some debate about, like, what's the thinnest phone. But regardless, it's very, very thin. It's 163 grams, so very light, and it starts at $1,100. So, in some ways, it's kind of like a mix between the S25 Plus and the S25 Ultra. It has the same 6.7-inch screen, same size, at least, as the S25 Plus, but it has the 200-megapixel main camera sensor from the S25 Ultra, and also has a new kind of Corning Gorilla Glass Ceramic 2 screen. But one really interesting thing is that they didn't give it a matte or like anti-reflective coating like you get on the S25 Ultra, because Samsung said that would make it like infinitesimally thicker, and that was not allowed. Clearly, they were like, you know, very clear, hey, this thing's got to be as thin as possible.
So does that make it glossier?
It's kind of your just normal glossy screen, because whatever, like, you know, matte thing that the coating they had going on with S25 Edge, it was like, it's enough of a film that it's detectably thicker, and they're like, nope, not allowed.
That's hilarious. Sam?
Go ahead.
So you have played with this thing, yes, you're holding it up on the stream now. And
just got this in, so I haven't done a ton of testing yet, just to be clear.
Matt Smith on our team for his hands-on went and put it in and out of his pants pocket just to see how well it fit. And speaking of the pants pocket, I think a lot of people on our stream are like, oh my gosh, if I put it in my back pants pocket and sit on it, will it break because it's so thin? Like, Tom Rogers is like, it's bendy. What's the over-under on the number of phone bending videos? Sam, are you bending it? Oh my gosh.
Now it's talking to me.
Yep, now it's talking.
It kind of looks like it bent a little.
It bent a tiny bit, but like, it's not something that you like. I think you really have to like actively like worry about.
Is it going to send you a bending alert? Like a big is like, please stop.
No,
it hurts.
It's trying to talk back at me now. But anyways,
that's funny.
So one thing about like the durability, it also has a titanium frame, just like the S25 Ultra. So, you know, it should be relatively durable. And then between that and the Gorilla Glass Ceramic 2, I'm actually not worried about the durability at all. It's, you know, you pick it up and it's like, it's super thin, it's super light. And I think in your pocket, the lightness actually makes more of a difference than the thinness. I can't tell a difference between this and like a regular S25 Ultra in my pocket. And just in terms of like dimensions, the weight makes definitely more of a difference there. But the other, there are some kind of downsides to this design. If you look at the back, only two cameras. So you get, to that 200 megapixel main sensor, an ultra wide, but no dedicated telephoto. So that's obviously one big drawback compared to the S25 Ultra
and even the
S25 Plus.
How much is this phone with no triple camera?
$1,100.
Ridiculous.
And obviously the other kind of big concession is that it has a smaller battery life too. So it's got a 3900 milliamp hour battery, which is smaller than the base S25. And, you know, during my demo, the Samsung reps were actually like really candidly, like honest about, hey, we know that this thing is going to have better battery life than a base S24, but it's going to be a little bit worse than a base S25. And so they kind of obviously know that, you know, there is some concessions in terms of like, we had to make the battery smaller to make it so thin. And that's kind of the big issue. It also still has that kind of Qi 2 readiness. So it's not full Qi 2. You do need to add on a case with a magnet in order to get that. And Samsung did make their own first party like thin case. And, you know, in terms of like trying to make sure that like, you know, normally you think about, hey, if you put a phone in a case, suddenly it's just as bulky as everything else. They have, you know, tried to kind of retain that sleekness, that, you know, thin design with their first party case. But, you know, you're already immediately starting to lose a lot of that, you know, that nice, you know, build quality, that engineering when you do put it in a case.
Yeah. My question for you, Sam, though, is what is the point of this? Is it just aesthetics? You're paying more for a lesser gadget, but I guess it feels good. It feels nicer. Yeah, we were just talking about the 12-inch MacBook and how cute that was, even though that had compromises. What do you think?
Yeah, it's definitely a design play. I mean, I was talking to some other people, and I think, weirdly enough, I think the competitors for this aren't like other traditional smartphones. It's phones like the Moto Razr or even Samsung's own, you know, Galaxy Z Flip line. Because if you want something a little bit thinner, a little bit smaller, more compact, easy to carry around, that this sort of delivers on that, but it does it in a different way than your traditional, like, you know, flip style foldable phones. And so I think that's kind of more the play. And, you know, the other thing like that keeps coming back to me is that we kind of already went through this whole like quest for thinness with phones back in like the late 2010s. And then so here's the reason why that kind of push went away is because 5G came around. So if you remember, 5G in the beginning, it had a bigger power drain, bigger battery draw. So
huge antennas too.
Yeah. Exactly. Right.
And huge antennas,
yeah,
and thicker modems. And, you know, there's a bunch of different components that because of 5G came around, they sort of didn't have the option to do something super thin and super slim anymore. And so that's kind of why that whole trend went away, you know, kind of with the advent of 5G. And now that 5G has been around for a while, you kind of see it's kind of like the fashion game. Everything's cyclical, right? So something's coming back in style. And so now they're coming back in style with these kind of super thin phones to, hey, maybe you might, you know, catch the attention of some people, maybe some people who aren't like, you know, normal phone people. They go, oh, I do like a thin phone, and they don't really care as much about specs per se.
Yeah. You're saying this one is 5.8 millimeters thick. Is Samsung slacking a little? Because the latest iPads, the iPad Pros that we talked about, the super thin ones, the 11-inch is 5.3 millimeters thin.
Yeah, I mean,
the 13-inch is 5.1 millimeters
thin. You have like just more area to spread out a battery. But to me, actually, the funny thing that I thought, and I think I called this like when they first like kind of teased the S25 Edge, is that this phone really is kind of one half of a Galaxy Z Fold.
Right.
They just took a Galaxy Z Fold, cut it in half, and then got rid of the flexible display and put glass on front. Because here, let me see if I can show you right here. This is a Galaxy Z Fold 6. And if I hold up the... Look at that. It's almost identically the same as basically half the Z Fold 6.
That makes sense. And that kind of goes into, you know, what people are saying about the thin iPhone, Sam, that's rumored. Like, that could potentially be Apple's stepping stone to doing a foldable too. Because once you design the thin plane on one side, it's easy enough to do on both sides, right?
Right. And so you kind of see that, like, I'm not necessarily like they're copying each other, but like almost Samsung and Apple are finding ways to kind of recycle things that they're already working on or have already produced in order to maybe get a little bit more value out of this, because it, you know, this is still part of the S25 family. This is not like a brand new generation. And so I think that's kind of where we're at.
Can I just point out that there's like a couple of really great points in the chat. So number one, Tom Rogers is like, cases will bulk it back up. So like, what was the whole point? Who uses their phone? Everyone that sees me use the iPhone without a case is like, oh my gosh, you use it naked? Seems like people are more about using cases. So what was the point? But, you know, I understand that like this is basically half of the folding phone situation. Also, they kind of just wanted to do it. Kevin says is like, battery life is low due to the maxed out processor. Sam, what processor is in this thing?
It's a Snapdragon 8 Elite, but it's one of those customized for Galaxy versions. And so it, you know, I haven't done, you know, a ton of performance testing, but it's not, I wouldn't worry about the performance in terms of like, you know, multitasking or app loading or even playing games. Samsung even said that they managed to fit a vapor chamber inside here. So I really wouldn't worry about the performance in terms of that. You know, maybe there'd be like a little bit of throttling, but that's more of a heat management thing in terms of like, rather than like, you know, just all out performance capabilities, at least.
This thing's available, what, like soon, right? May, what was
pre-orders of the end, May? The end of the month. So it's already available for pre-orders now. It'll be officially on sale. I believe it's May 30th.
So question is, Tom Rogers is like, 1100, is that pre-tariff or post-tariff? Now, Korea is kind of where these are coming in from, or are they coming in from some kind of local?
Yeah, so I did ask about that. And as far as we know, or at least current things, unless, you know, something tariff related happens again, $1,100 is the base US price. So there's that.
Yeah. And Samsung, I'm just looking up, Samsung phones are made in Vietnam and India. So I don't know. Boy. Same thing. Like Apple wants to put more production in India as well for tariff reasons. Yeah.
Exactly. DeepRow9 confirms what we were saying by commenting, I have never not had a case on my phone. So
I am vocally very anti-case. I understand why people do it, but it's like, you know, companies spend millions of dollars kind of trying to engineer these things. And so for the same reason, I don't like using cases. I have started using skins on phones just to, give a little bit of extra cushioning, but that's, you know, skins are thin. They don't really impact the overall feel and, you know, kind of dimensions of that.
I like how your argument is companies are spending millions to design these things because consumers, Sam, are spending thousands of dollars on these phones. Put a damn case on.
Okay, but you're right. Put your protection on. Allow me to retort. Do you have a case on your car? I know Sherlyn doesn't drive, but Devinder, do you have a case on your car?
I have clear coat on my car. A lot of people have clear coat on their cars.
So clear coat is great, but a clear coat is closer to a skin than a case, right? Because it doesn't impact the look.
I'm not holding my car. Yeah.
And so it's like, so I guess the best comparison is, you remember anyone who uses those old school car bras that, like, you know, are made of leather and they go on like the front bumper of your car?
Oh my God, did you just call it still a thing? Those,
that's what they're called. Go look them up. And so
they still
people
exist.
Don't use those because they suck and they make your car look ugly in the same way that cases make your phones suck, or at least thicker, and they make your phone look ugly.
We're going off on a tangent here. Those things are all over New York, Sam. You know why they're all over New York is because New Yorkers don't know how to like park without bumping into the cars in front or behind them. So that's a part of parallel parking. They still exist, those car curtains. But anyway, Sam, when you shatter a phone,
there's a difference between the car bras and the bumper bullies, though. I'm going to say here.
It's a whole different thing. Yeah, well, the bumper bullies, same thing. We're going to have this argument over and over again. I kind of feel like from Samsung, this is another Galaxy Note like throw. Just like, is this a thing? Are you guys into this? Cool? Anybody? Whereas what Apple did with the iPad Pro, which I don't see too many people thinking about now, but we're talking about, the first time I saw one of those when we did WWDC last year, it was kind of a holy shit moment of like, how is this thing so thin? You kind of want it because it's so thin, but it's not like a special iPad Pro. It's just they made the iPad Pro thinner. I feel like eventually that's what Samsung is going to do. Maybe eventually what Apple's going to do. Those compromises, though, we want a telephoto lens. People love telephoto lenses. There's a lot of things people are going to compromise on just to get a slightly thinner phone. Like, how much thinner is this than the base Galaxy S25? Is it noticeable?
The base S25, it's like a millimeter or two.
Yeah.
It's really not a ton.
I don't know. I think my bigger concern would be battery life and also that heat dissipation. I don't know that the vapor chamber alone will be good enough. We'll see. I mean, it's the same custom tuned processor as in the other three S25s. We will have to see, I guess. Sam will publish his review soon enough. So I guess. Come through to read that.
I want to know what listeners think. Podcastandgadget.com. Are you intrigued by super thin phones? Because Apple's going to do it. All the rumors are pointing to Apple doing it. Will they do it differently? Will it even matter? Is it just a design stepping stone to the foldable or something else for Apple? We'll see. I guess Apple kind of already did it with those iPads too, because those things are ridiculous. I would not recommend most people buy them. But if you go to an Apple store, just take a look. Like how wildly thin those things are.
So for the record, a base S25 is 7.2 millimeters.
Oh my God.
And this thing is 5.8. So we're really talking about the difference of about a millimeter and a half.
So that is noticeable, and this has the bigger screen. So I think for the style-oriented folks, you know, we were just talking about the 12-inch MacBook Sherlyn, which you were showing off, and that thing was so cute, but it didn't make much sense. When I reviewed the Surface Pro, the new one, the 12-inch one, it's the same idea. That sure is cute, even though it's a slower processor, worse screen, yada, yada, yada. Sherlyn has the 12-inch MacBook, which was, look at that sucker. It's look still beautiful. Go look at
thin.
The live stream.
Look how I could slice cake with it.
Not it butter. Is so thin, except that was the bad. That's the bad keyboard. That's the butterfly yes. keyboard, oh and so
it's
so
got
many
basically no
issues.
Travel. It's quite awful.
No but. Travel, slow processor. But anyway, people want thin, weirdly attractive gadgets. I guess we want cute stuff.
Yeah, I just for me, yeah. the whole quest for thinness is kind of already reached an endpoint, and so like talking about hey, we've cut down another, shaved off another millimeter. To me, it's not meaningfully different. Now, that said, I'm not going to name any names, but when I was at my hands-on demo, there were some other outlets and people from some other, you know, websites over there, and they were just drooling over this thing. So maybe I'm in the minority.
Name Sam. Embarrass people. Yeah.
They couldn't stop talking about how nice it felt in the hand. And it feels really like you pick it up, and if you know, as long as you're not worried about the, you know, the durability, which I'm not really. It definitely feels nice. You appreciate it. It does feel, you know, a little bit futuristic, a little science fiction, just because of how thin it is. But I don't know. Just for me, the appeal is not there. It doesn't change. It doesn't really change how I feel about the S25 family. But I'm not upset that it exists.
Okay. We'll hear more about the S25 Edge in the coming weeks, folks. Stay tuned. All right, speaking of Android phones and the Android ecosystem in general, there's a bit of the Android show this week where Google announced some things ahead of I.O. What the heck is Material 3 Expressive? Google's so bad at naming these things. Someone describe it for me.
So in general, material design is sort of something that Google has been kind of championing or pioneering on Android stuff for quite a while. I think it dates back to like the mid-2010s as like the original material. And Material 3 Expressive is sort of kind of trying to finish the game when it comes to material and really actually make the UI a little bit more interesting, a little bit more animated. They're talking about more vibrant colors and just basically kind of doing stuff to make sure that the UI just looks better, but it's also easier to use. So that includes stuff like, you know, there's going to be some new haptic rumble features for different things, and there's going to be, you know, more adherence to a lot of the Material 3 design principles, and that includes like, you know, floating bars that make, you know, UI elements easier to see, and, you know, new backgrounds and stuff like that. And one thing that I'm actually kind of excited about is that it looks like they've kind of opened up the color palette for Material 3 design, because currently, like, if you want to do that like matchy-matchy thing where your icons and stuff match the wallpaper, at least color-wise, you kind of have to choose one of Google's like, you know, limited range of mostly pastel colors. And so this looks like it's bringing some more vibrancy back into that color palette, or at least the color choices. And so basically, you know, it's another kind of design UI UX overhaul to make, you know, the Android feel a lot more engaging. And kind of at this point in the Android kind of life cycle, where there's not a ton of like big missing omissions that people want added to the platform, in terms of like excitement about, you know, Android updates, this is going to be kind of nice. I'll be excited to test it out when it goes officially live later this year. Yeah.
During the Android show and or during a briefing we attended, there was a lot of use of this word. I don't know if you noticed this word. I don't know if the word was bouncy or if it was springy, but it gave the idea that Material 3 Expressive is also about the animations, is also about the idea of
very much so.
Responsiveness. Yeah. Plus, and the other thing I'm sure you also mentioned already, but like I want to shout out the toolbar, the live updates thing, very similar also to Apple's live activities. Again, we're going like everyone's copying each other. Like Google had a version of the live activities thing in its notification shape for a while, and then Apple did it, and then now they're doing it a different way on Android. So go ahead, Sam.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to be clear, like, Android did have some, like, limited, like, you know, progress bars in the notifications thing. And this is kind of an expansion of that, because, like, You know, say you want to, you know, order an Uber, you're going to get a little bit more granularity on like when the car is arriving or when your delivery might be arriving. But yes, you know, it is, I'm sure that the designers at Google are aware that what Apple is doing with the dynamic island exists. And so, you know, they're kind of cribbing off each other a little bit, but it's mostly an expansion of things that kind of already exist. But to your point, like they did mention like kind of the springiness and the animations in Material 3 a lot, because I think it just makes things a little bit more, you know, visually appealing, but also more eye-catching. So if you see something that's bouncing around your screen, it's a lot easier to like, oh, maybe I need to touch that or see what it can do.
It's a little more delightful. Google has never been a very good design-oriented company. Like when they started Material, I think that was a sign where I was like, oh, Android's getting a little better. Android's getting a little more interesting. This is like when a magazine gets a new design lead and they're just like, bold colors, big fonts. Let's go neon. Let's go all over the place. There's some examples in Google's blog post. It looks good. It looks more alive and more modern.
Tom Rogers is saying, was there less AI talk in the Android show?
I saw that
and
too.
Yes, there was. And so actually, that's actually a good question, because people were like, why are we even having an Android show? Google I.O. is literally next week.
That's true.
And I think that was kind of a play by Google to be like, hey, at Google I.O., and they haven't said this officially yet, but everyone can kind of tell it's coming, we are going to talk a crap ton about AI and Gemini and everything machine learning at Google I.O. And so by having this Android show a week early, it kind of gives Google a chance to kind of break out gadget-specific, Android-specific stuff a little bit earlier and kind of give it a little bit more room to breathe, and then they can hit us over the head with the AI hammer next week.
Not to say there was no AI at all. There was less, like you said, at the Android show. And Tom Rogers, to be very clear, all the AI talk's probably going to be safe for next week at actual I.O. But Android show also unveiled that Gemini was coming to all kinds of other devices across the Android ecosystem, like the Wear OS watches, which I saw... For some reason, Deepro9 in our chat is very excited about. Cool. Android Auto or cars with Google built in will also get Gemini, and also I believe Google TV. I don't know what the experience is like in cars with Android Auto or cars with Google built in right now. Sam, do you have any like impressions so far if Gemini will be a good thing to those platforms?
I mean, it'll be a fine addition, but it's like, I always come back to the thing where it's like, sure, it'll be great to have Gemini in, you know, Google TV, in Android Auto, cars with, you know, Google built in. This is all fine and great, but it's like, I'm just thinking, how many times do I actually how much time of my day do I spend talking to AI? And it's like, it right now, it's not that much. And I don't think that's going to change a ton. Now, you know, Google said that, you know, they're bringing Gemini to the watch and to basically all the platforms, which we kind of known is coming. And especially on the watch, it'll be nice because if you're, you know, for example, if your Pixel watch has LTE functionality, it doesn't need to be tethered to your smartphone to, you know, get responses. It can just do that using its own connection. Or, you know, if you're at the gym and you're close enough to your phone, you know, you can still set reminders and then talk to Gemini that way, which is all great. And they said that, like, you know, for example, with Google TV, you'll be able to ask Gemini to do stuff like find age appropriate movies for children, which is like, okay, sure. But how often are you really doing that?
I think that is smart until, and I saw this on Reddit, the assistant or whatever recommendation engine tells you that these hentai animes are cute cartoons for kids. Like,
it's just anime, man. Yeah,
and so this goes back to, like, you know, the fallibility of AI. It's like, you still can't really trust everything it tells you, and so, hey, that's kind of comes with part of the package.
Can't really trust most things it tells you, apparently. There's also news about better security features, right, coming to Android. Scam detection, find feature on Android.
I actually like this. So I believe that the Pixel phones have been at the forefront of this anti-scam, anti-spam measures built into a phone. They've been historically much better than Apple at detecting when incoming calls are spam and screening them for you. I really like the call screening features. And Apple still has not been able to properly replicate or deliver like a comparable product, in my opinion. So anyway, this week's news with that is In terms of when you're answering a call or talking to someone on a call, and the AI, which somehow is listening, I guess, is like, this is starting to veer into scam territory. It will detect it and alert you or flag it. And then also it's improved the system to better identify now newer or new trends in scams. So Road Tolls is one of them. And I believe Bitcoin/crypto is another. I would love for them to start hitting the ones that are like, we have a job for you. Interview. I work for HR at this weird company in Maine. I don't know. So that's one of the pieces of news. And then also they're refining the Find My interface into what they're calling the Find Hub. And I think one of the more intriguing pieces of news there is that satellite connectivity is, or the support for satellite connectivity is coming, which may be, again, familiar to some on the iOS ecosystem as the SOS via satellite, emergency SOS via satellite, or locating people via satellite. Not a lot of details were shared at the Android show. I'm not sure if they'll actually be shared at Google I/O too. I think they'll actually wait until much later in the year, maybe closer to the Pixel launch, to tell us more about that. I wonder if I missed anything.
They said the scam detection also applies to a lot of tech scams too. And this is one of those things where you think, oh, machine learning is such a good fit for stuff like
this. Right.
Because it can read a lot of incoming scam texts, see how people respond, and kind of, you know, update itself a little bit faster to be able to recognize the stuff better. And they specifically mentioned like toll road scams, gift card scams, crypto scams, which has been, issue for a while. And so I think that's, this is actually one of those like, oh, this is a really good application of machine learning and AI technology.
On this topic, I saw a Harvard Business Review Instagram post about top Gen AI use cases and how they changed from 2024 to 2025. In 2024, the top use case was generating ideas. Specific search was the third place. Exploring topics of interest was fifth place. In 2025, this year, therapy/companionship is top, which I know some people do that. Number two,
I feel like that might be a little too far, but okay.
Well, our friend Alex Kranz does that a lot with Claude AI, so we'll see.
And wow, then way two, to throw Alex out there.
I know. Well, she talks about it quite publicly. Number two in 2025, organizing my life. Number three in 2025, finding purpose. It sounds like the uses for Gen AI are being refined. I think they're less fact-based and more existential nowadays.
I also think that people are sort of exploring more about how to use AI. And instead of just simply, hey, I'm going to ask questions and try to get answers, they're trying to like actually, have more of a like relationship with AI, if that makes sense. You know, there's, all sorts of like AI companionship stuff and people, making boyfriends or, whatever.
Falling in love.
On ChatGPT. Right. This is, it feels like, every month there's like a new story kind of like about that. People are almost using AI to like find purpose or find guidance instead of answer questions now, which is kind of an interesting transition.
Yeah.
I was going to ask either of you if you have, like, do you use AI a lot? I know we've talked about this so much before, but has it changed?
Only on like a tool specific purpose. I do it for transcription stuff, both locally and in the cloud, like, the whole bunch of stuff. Sam, how are you using it?
I still love AI transcription. The Pixel Recorder app is one of the most used apps, on a daily basis. This is something that we should probably look into just like professionally, is I heard about a new AI thing that can ingest like a website or publication's style guide and apply that to your writing.
Please.
I would love for the two of you to try
this. This is a legitimately good idea. I'm not I don't want them to change the language, but if they notice, hey, this word is, should be styled this way, just go ahead and change it in the same way that like spell check changes, like,
that is really smart, Sam. Actually, wow. I the number of times I have to tell people in the Engadget team where to put a comma and where not to is ridiculous. I would be very excited for us to have that in-house.
Yeah. So. And some other like interesting application, AI applications, is like, there's for like legal text, you can like, go in and set a bunch of words and then have an AI read a text and automatically redact that stuff, which seems like a really kind of just like good expansion of like, being able to fill and replace certain things. And so that seems like a really natural evolution of stuff. I still be a little worried if you know, if I was a lawyer about like, what happens if the AI misses something and then that unredacted text gets out into the public and then you have a whole big issue. But at least the idea seems good.
It should only ever be a first pass because there have been so many examples of lawyers.
You're still going to have to do a manual review. Absolutely.
Yeah. Lawyers have already used AI to like draft statements to the court and things. And judges are like, what the hell is happening here? You're pointing to precedent that does not exist. You're making stuff up completely. I just want to point out, the more we talk about like how humans are learning to live with generative AI, the more it does feel like we're kind of doomed, aren't we? Like our monkey brains, which have used things in the past, like superstition and religion, and I'm not going to get too controversial here, but to explain the world. And now we have this tool that you can have a relationship with that is kind of doing some of that for you. This is the WALL-E future. This is so much of the, I don't know. Is humanity equipped to live with the consequences of a generative AI? We shall see. Because it's not looking good right now.
No, it's not.
We've got some accessibility news as well. Global Accessibility Awareness Day was this week, right, Sherlyn?
So it is actually today as we're recording the podcast. May 15th is it's usually the like second Thursday of every May. I might be misremembering, but yeah, this year it's today. And so every tech company in the last few years has been just taking this opportunity to, you know, either share or announce new accessibility features. So for example, Apple announced a whole ton of updates. And I think
it's a very long post Sherlyn wrote. Yeah.
Say that again.
That's a very long post you wrote.
It is a really long couple of posts, and actually three posts, because first one we broke out was the accessibility nutrition labels. That's what Apple calls them, coming to the App Store. So very similar to the privacy information label that's already in App Store, telling you what an app gets on you, right? The data that they're tracking or using from you. Rolling out later this year will be accessibility nutrition label. So it'll tell you things like, oh, if this app meets the criteria according to their developer, for things like larger font or increased contrast or differentiate without color alone, which is really important because I play so many matching games. And if they're all on color alone, if you're colorblind or you have some sort of other visual impairment, then yeah, that game is not playable. And you don't want to wait till you download the game to find out in the settings that there's no colorblind mode. So this is going to be helpful. And also the gaming industry is trying something like that too. So we will see. Hopefully this comes to more apps, programs, software services in future. I guess I didn't mute my MacBook. there's another slew of features, including, I just want to point out one thing that was buried in like other updates and like a small bullet point was Apple added a new protocol for brain-computer interfaces, so BCIs, into its Switch Input suite of tools. So Switch Input is basically allowing you to connect a button or a joystick or whatever and use that as a Switch Input for using your devices, computers, or phones. And adding the protocol for BCIs basically means that one day, theoretically, in my post originally when I saw that, I was like, this theoretically means you can use your brainwaves to control your devices. And not that you couldn't already do some sort of eye gaze or other hands-free control, but BCI is very different. Wouldn't you know, the next morning, Wall Street Journal has the exclusive report on Apple wants to allow you to control your devices with your thoughts. They've teamed up the startup that makes BCI devices, Synchron, announced yesterday or Tuesday that it is the first to natively work with iPhones, iPads, and Apple Vision Pros. So I know, let's set aside the behind the scenes of this, of how infuriating it is to find out the morning of that something you suspected was going to be big news was actually someone else's exclusive report.
However, I'm sorry. I got to interrupt.
That's how it goes.
This is not big news.
BCI, I know, I understand.
The hard part about BCIs is getting the information from your like squishy brain into a digital form.
Yeah.
Once you have like the digital signal, being able to like accept, you know, bits and ones and zeros and like manipulate a smartphone, that's the easy part. That's an API.
The protocol
here.
Like,
I'm not
going to
give Apple a bunch of credit for inventing something that they just like.
I'm just complaining about the behind the scenes part of this, where I'm like annoyed.
I get it. It's just like
I will say, so,
both, I think Apple and that Wall Street Journal story are kind of pumping it up to be something way bigger than
maybe
it is.
Maybe the startup is Synchron, maybe. To your point, though, like, it's a very grabby headline, right? It's like, oh, you can use, and Synchron had released a video about a month ago to be like, oh, you can use the force to control your iPad with your thoughts alone. It is overselling it a little bit because, like, again, to my understanding, and I might be wrong, depending on the OS, switch input control can be very binary. It can be quite difficult to properly set up. So especially with BCI, the ones that I've tested so far, the Muse headbands and whatnot, they're all very, again, intensity based, right? Like, if you think hard enough, then we will flip to yes. And if you don't think very hard, then we'll flip to no. Like, it's, my understanding is limited. Of course, I haven't spent enough time with these devices. I don't know how sophisticated they are these days. But this is one step towards implementing BCI with a very mainstream catalog of devices, like the Apple devices, even if it is quite limited right now. I will say, to your point, Sam, there's a lot more other accessibility updates from Apple that are probably more important.
that everyone will be able to see immediately.
Soon. Usually these roll out with the next version of iOS, iPadOS, macOS. So starting with Magnifier for Mac, basically, Magnifier has been available on iPhone and iPad for a while. It's the app that you open and use your camera to point at things, and then it'll either read out to you if it detects a doorway or a sign, or you can use it to, like, make things in your world easier to read. That's why the name Magnifier. So MacBook never had that before. Now you can use your phone as a camera or any other USB connected camera and use Magnifier for Mac. I think they showed a video of a person using this in a lecture hall, sitting very far away from the whiteboard and being able to use their phone, clip it to the top of their MacBook and then kind of see the whiteboard more clearly, increase contrast, put a color filter on, depending on your accessibility needs. There's really a whole lot more. I mean, there's updates coming to personal voice to make it easier to set up. There's improvements coming to vehicle motion cues. There's an accessibility reader that's built into Magnifier for Mac, as well as just Magnifier in general, which makes things that you want to read easier to read. It'll parse out the distractions. So kind of like, I was immediately thinking, oh, it can remove ads from those articles that I hate to read because of the ads. I don't know yet.
There are easier ways to do that. Yeah. What the cool example, the top image that you're showing is somebody having their phone on a stand and the camera is doing like the desk view thing.
So exactly.
It's pointing down at a book and then it's looking at the text of that book, which looks like really fine text, and bringing that over to big fonts on the actual computer.
Yes.
I used to help a lot of people in college, especially older professors. And man, this sort of thing would have been so useful for them to, like, quickly look through tiny font books.
Menus, flyers, these kinds of really old books. I mean, I think the one of the examples Apple provided for accessibility reader, which is basically this part of the feature built into Magnifier is what enables desk view, is Odyssey, the book Odyssey, which is, like, I'm sure we would, like,
the Odyssey, like, the Odyssey, yeah, yeah.
The Odyssey, so
soon to be a Christopher Nolan helpful. movie.
I truly cannot remember, like, most of what else. I think there's some improvements coming to music haptics. Look, I got the information, parsed it in 12 hours, and wrote about, like, 1,200 words on this. Well, hang on.
Well, I can go through articles. Braille access, which it could be cool.
Braille access
Apple Watch
is good,
getting live captions. Vision Pro getting live recognition. That's cool. A lot of things. A lot of little things here,
so
actually.
Many little things.
Poor Sherlyn was stuck with sometimes you get news that's just like, hey, this is a core concept. We're in and out in like 400, 500 words. And sometimes it's like,
so many little things. Yeah, they're all kind of worth shouting out. I will point out that other companies also are making announcements this week. There are some we can't talk about just yet, but we will find out later today. But Kia also made an EV that is designed to be friendly for wheelchair users. Amazon very helpfully is reminding people in a blog post what accessibility features they do have, if you were not aware before, but they don't seem to have announced anything new just for this week. I would say I am working on something accessibility related as an article for this week. So come back to Engadget.com for all the details.
Let's move on to some other news. And speaking of Apple-y stuff, we finally saw the unveiling of the so-called next generation CarPlay that they've been teasing for a while. It's called Apple CarPlay Ultra. It's going to be debuting in Aston Martin's. This is the version of CarPlay that not only like goes in the infotainment center screen, but also takes over the like main HUD that is in front of the steering wheel. And I remember when they like first announced this, people were a little skeptical and a little iffy about Apple taking almost full control of your car's interface. Sam, you've looked at like recent cars. You're using a modern car at this point. What do you think about this idea of like CarPlay being everywhere?
So, you know, historically, there's been a big fight between like Google and Apple and car makers themselves because people want to be able to use like a UI or an interface that they are comfortable with. And for most people, that interface is their phones. But the car makers didn't want to give up control about what goes on the screen. And so that's why you have kind of like over-the-top services like Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. Now, that kind of changed a little bit with like Google built in and having like, you know, Polestars and some other companies where, you know, they are relying on kind of a Android or Google kind of platform underneath, and then they can style that to be however I want, but, you know, they still support Google apps natively.
Right, right.
And this sort of seems like what Apple CarPlay is doing. It's closer to Google built in on cars than Android Auto. And so it's really interesting to see that, like, you know, it seems like Apple has made some concessions where like they're allowing like Aston Martin kind of customize the look in the UI and have different themes so that even though it is Apple CarPlay Ultra, it still looks Aston Martin-y. And I think that kind of, you know, we've seen in car makers kind of fumble when it comes to having just awful infotainments. And it was worse, you know, 5-10 years ago. And it's been getting a little bit better, partly because of CarPlay and Android Auto. And so this is kind of the next step for companies that like are more, I guess, on the Apple side of things where like, you know, they want to have a big name partner and a UI that people are familiar with, but they also want to be able to have a consistent approach across multiple screens in the car, which is, you know, very much this. I'm just kind of unclear about if this means that everything is still being tethered from the phone, including all your data and stuff like that, or if there's actual some sort of Apple code running on the car itself. And I'm not quite clear on that yet.
Yeah, that's a question. Like if your phone is not paired, the whole thing about CarPlay is either you have to plug it in or you have to be paired wirelessly to a car. And then stuff essentially gets mirrored from your device there. If you don't have a phone, is it just like the stock Aston Martin UX at this point?
Yeah.
I think it kind of is.
And so that's the other thing is that like there's also a big kind of argument between like car buyers and automakers in terms of like, and then we've seen this most kind of heatedly recently with GM, where they kind of pulled Apple CarPlay and Android Auto support because they wanted to have their homegrown UI front
terrible,
and center.
Terrible.
And so like my thought on this is that if you have a really good infotainment system with a really good UI and a really good interface, you don't need Apple CarPlay or Android Auto because you have a really good system built in on the car. And so you just, you know, hey, you can, you know, connect Bluetooth, you can answer phones and do some texting and stuff like that. But it's kind of like, remember when they had the Motorola Atrix and the whole idea was like, you're going to have a laptop, but it's going to be powered by your phone.
Right.
You're going to put your phone a laptop dock. To me, that doesn't work. In a lot of ways, having a car tethered to your phone is sort of the same thing. The reason why it works on cars is because automakers were just so bad at making their own UIs and infotainment systems that the alternative was Apple and Google and just doing it better and more consistently. And so I just want car makers to get better in general at doing a good UI. You know, everyone talks about, you know, despite Elon's craziness, the Tesla infotainment system is really, really good. And Rivian's is like kind of getting there. And
which
Lucid
don't support
also
CarPlay or Android Auto. You can only use their stuff. Yeah,
correct. And same thing for Lucid. You know, Lucid is, you know, really good. And when you have a really good infotainment system, you don't need help from your phone. But if you're like Aston Martin and you're want to focus more on the design and, you know, the powertrain of a car and let kind of Apple handle some of the like the framework for the infotainment, that makes sense to me. And I can see giving them more control over multiple screens and having, you know, more ability to customize things as they want without necessarily having to design and program every single app. That makes a lot of sense to me.
There's a cost to it too, though. Like the original Tesla like market were wealthy people. You know, the Rivian market is wealthy people. And when you have a car that is doing its own stuff, it also needs its own internet connection because it's not getting it from your phone. So there's another monthly fee for you. I don't know how many people would enjoy paying more another, you know, subscription just for their car's data. Whereas the easiest thing in the world is to plug in your phone or do the wireless connection and get what you need from your phone. The thing with the 5G antenna that you're already paying $100 to $200 a month for. You know, I feel like that's the big draw for the other styles here. But I guess we will see. Are there any Aston Martin owners or would-be owners listening to the show? Let us know. You probably would.
And maybe take us for a ride?
Yeah, please. Adopt me, please. I want to see your devices.
Oh, boy.
That's a cool car. You're the weirdest thing, Sam, is I've seen occasionally like James Bond cars, like James Bond level Aston Martins. They're used like $30,000 to $40,000. Like, oh, that's within reach.
Oh, depreciation on used, like super premium luxury cars is nuts.
But also, what's the maintenance on that? What's the repair cost on that? You know, you can buy one of those cars, but you cannot actually get them repaired.
Yeah, you got to be careful, or else that car can turn into a money pit real quick.
Yeah, another thing we want to shout out, Mr. Steve Dent, our resident camera guy and drone guy, has reviewed the DJI Mavic 4 Pro. He calls it a new standard for consumer drones. He loves this thing. 93 out of 100, editor's choice for us. They have been so good. DJI has been so good with these drones and these cameras too, like just a 1-2 punch. They're just getting better and better.
Steve calls it the most technologically advanced drone, not only hyping or really being very excited for the video and photo quality, also the low light performance, and like the obstacle avoidance and detection is quite good. There's just a couple of complaints that Steve had, but I think his biggest word of caution is it's not available in the US. So that's with a lot of, you know, the headwind sort of considerations, tariffs, and like whether there will be a DJI ban in this country are things in the way. But if you are looking for like the highest end drone that would take the best sort of aerial footage, this would be it if you can get it. So yeah, it's kind of sad, right? Like I just would like to get a DJI Neo or like the step up from that. I forget the name. There's so many. The Neo, the $200 drone that takes decent 1080p video while screaming like a banshee. Yeah, I love that.
Like banshees. It's the whole thing. The DJI stuff, because of our stupid, all the tariff mess, it's been harder and harder to get their things. This thing looks fantastic, though. When the initial Trump tariff stuff happened, like I was saying, like there are some devices we just have to say goodbye to for a while and stuff
drones,
like this.
Yeah, drones were one of them.
Drones are one of them. And also DJI is one of them. I have like the DJI like handheld camera too, which shot up $200 since I bought it. Apparently,
oh, the Osmo, yeah,
yeah, Osmo, yeah. So this thing is cool. Thank you. Yeah. Steve is based in France, and Steve is living in a wonderland.
Yeah, randomly a chateau in his life, just cool.
I love Steve. We gotta get good Steve back on. Live your best life, Steve, and he is. He absolutely is.
There's been a lot of like interesting gadgets announced this week. In fact, this week has been quite the slog in our industry. There's been a lot of embargoes that lifted this week, including Sony Xperia had announced a new phone that borrows from its classic or iconic device, the Walkman. I know, Sam, we don't really cover Xperia phones very much these days because their availability in the US is very limited. But would you, if given the chance, want to review a Sony Xperia phone?
I really like Xperia phones, but I don't understand Sony's like business strategy, because they keep coming out with new Xperias and they always have really cool features, but they're not really available here. They're not available from any of the carriers, so you always have to get a third party. And just like, especially in the US, it's very different in Europe and Asia. There's just like almost no support or marketing or anything in the way of just like discovery for Xperia phones. And so it's like, and they always have really cool hardware, but one of like the biggest knock against Sony phones for a long time is that it have really cool hardware and components, and then the polish on that would just be never as good. A lot of the sensors that are in even Samsung phones and other big flagship phones, those are Sony sensors.
Exactly.
But because like Samsung and Google and others have better processing, they get better results even though they're using the same sensor that Sony puts in its own phones. And it's just, it's really frustrating. There was a time, like, back when Sony Xperias were, like, top tier. Like, you know, right up against Samsung and Apple and Google. And then they just kind of stopped trying, I feel like.
Some interesting comments saying, Sony still makes phones? Who knew? And Tom Rogers is like, Sony is always going to Sony. I remember when, like, Sony Xperia, I want to say one of the mid-2010 ones, did the super slow-mo, high frame rate ones for the first time on a phone, which is really cool.
They peaked. Yep, and they peaked with the Z3 line, and then they were I believe they were the first phone to support like full water resistance. They got into a little bit legal trouble because they kind of the marketing overstepped the capabilities. But I think they were one of the phones where like, you could just dunk a phone in a pool and it would be fine.
Yeah,
and so they actually remember way back before Apple did the action button or the camera button.
Exactly.
Sony had a dedicated shutter button on like the Z1 or Z2, and it's like that stuff is like 10, 15 years old at this point.
So just to actually give the details of this week's news to our listeners and viewers, Sony's Xperia 1 Mark or 7 VII, I guess, features hi-fi sound tech from the Walkman line. It's also got auto framing camera technology inspired by its Alpha line of cameras. And I think that's the thing Sony has done well with the Xperia phones is make them really good content creation and multimedia consumption devices. They've also got some PlayStation sort of integration. I don't know how good or well executed.
There's some like remote play, like Wi-Fi streaming capabilities.
Yeah. Which everybody
has. Two or three years ago, there was a really cool Xperia phone that had a built-in like really high-powered 5G modem and an HDMI port on it.
Yes,
and so
I remember.
But it was like really expensive, and it was really strictly meant for photographers. But they were giving them to like cameramen on the NFL sidelines, and they were tethering their Sony cameras, digital cameras, to the Sony phone, and they were streaming directly to NFL broadcast.
Power
and that
5G.
Was really, really cool.
Yeah.
But you only hear it's like it's so inside baseball that you don't really hear about it, and it's like. There's a lot of cool stuff that Sony does that like they aren't able to like bring to the mainstream in a way that other companies are. It's sad.
Their actual product decisions too are kind of baffling. Like I think we're all waiting for like their new headphones will be announced sometime soon. Everyone's waiting to hear about that. But then there's stuff like the freaking neck speakers, Sony, which
oh,
I don't.
God.
And I apparently that has become a thing which other people are making too. But they announced neck speakers and they're. That was like almost 10 years ago, and they sounded bad. They were hard to use. They didn't support Bluetooth. It's just like level after level of like good consumer electronics they just keep failing at. It is wild. It's wild like how somebody just keeps missing like this. Yeah.
The headphones you're mentioning, Devendra, I believe would be the WH-1000XM series, the X series.
The XM6.
And we're currently at Mark V. And what has it been, 3 years since the Mark V? Mm-hmm. It's basically high time for an update. So yeah, we are coming back into this part of the chat from the future where we can now publicly talk about Sony. The WH-1000XM6 headphones have actually been announced today, and our full review is on the site. Our Billy Steele reviewed it. He actually thinks, Sony just keeps improving on the best headphones in the market, over-ear headphones. These are the gold standard, really. They are a bit more expensive, $50 more expensive than the previous model. No real answer as to why there's a huge increase in price. I don't know. I can't blame it on tariffs is all I'm saying. But yeah, the quality continues to be good. The noise cancellation has been improved. We've got a slightly refined design that Billy says is more comfortable. All in all, I mean, just go check out our full review for all the little details like that. You've got the same sort of 30-hour battery life here as well. So nothing's really changed there. But if you've been looking for great over-ear headphones, check out our review and maybe these are the ones for you.
Yeah, Billy says it has improved sound, better ANC, handy features, and it's comfy. This looks exactly like the XM5s, which I really like. They made some tweaks around the headband, which is super
comfy. I bought my wife a pair of XM5s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. So the XM5s, with the XM5s, I think Sony took away the ability to fold the cups with the handle, and then they've brought this back. There is a little bit of a quirk that Billy didn't like about it, though. So
Folding is back. I would say for the sound, Billy says that there are new drivers in here for improved sound quality
and more mics for
I also think I think Sony is seeing, like, people are paying a lot of money for those freaking AirPods Max, and Apple has not touched them in years. So I think Sony's just like, we can go up, we can go higher. They've already done it with the PlayStations 2. You can still readily buy older versions of these headphones too. So I would not recommend going back too far back. Like, the 4s are still really good. The 5 with the redesign, if you don't mind that you can't fold it, I think are great. Like, those sound great.
I also want to call two things out. So the AirPod Maxes are still $100 more. They start at $550.
Yes.
And so that is like that makes the AirPod Maxes a really hard sell, even with the new Sonys being more expensive. But also, they finally fixed my biggest gripe about all of Sony's things, is that you can use them while they're charging now.
Yes.
You couldn't do that before.
I was
so happy to hear that. And I feel bad for my wife because she complains sometimes they die on her in the middle of like a conference call, and then she has to like switch to some other headphones.
Such a Sony problem of just like, this is such an easy UX fix. This is bothering everybody. It's been years. Please fix this.
So they finally fixed it. Wow. So I might actually buy some for myself. I don't know.
There you go. Oh, there you good go. Headphones. But weirdly, I'm also like weirdly, I look at the AirPods Max. I'm like, this would also be nice. It would also be nice to have like something that easily shifts between phone, computer, everything. We shall see. But anyway, check out Billy's review of the 1000 XM6, Sony's latest headphones.
But anyway, the details on the Xperia 1 7 are on the Engadget website, written by Steve Dent. So you know this is going to give you all the camera and the audio hi-fi quality details in there. But yeah, for 48 megapixel camera, you've got like improved audio quality. Speaking of audio and speakers, really quickly wanted to shout out the news that XMEMS, I know you've covered them before.
I have covered them. I'm really wondering why. Okay, you're excited about this? They're tiny speakers for smartwatches?
I just think it's funny. They've come up with this technology that puts like really tiny speakers for your wrist-worn wearables. So I guess we get better sound quality when we're talking to our watches. Listen, Apple did this with the Watch Ultra 2, I think, or the most recent update to the Watch series last iPhone event. And I really remember asking, who wants this? I guess if you want it, you got it. So yeah, XMEMS might be integrating this technology, or other people might be able to use this technology in their smartwatches in future. There's still plenty of other hardware news for the week, but I think we have other non-hardware news, right?
There's non-hardware news. There's stuff I want to hit too. There's some stuff we're gonna skip. Hey, Google changed the color of its logo. There's a gradient now. Stupid. So stupid.
I just wanted to shout out that like our headline was awesome. It was just G is for gradient. Google changes its new logo, and that was great.
And it's good enough for me. Max, guess what, folks?
My God.
Our long national nightmare.
I look at Sam face palming. That's so funny.
I don't think you can understand how hard I'm face palming at this.
Devendra, you face palm so please hard, your hair has been ruined, Sam. Like, you're just, you're a mess right now.
Go ahead. Let our misery expands to the audience.
So remember a couple years ago when HBO Max simply became Max, and we had many discussions about how dumb that was because the name brand of HBO is iconic. At least in America, generations have nostalgia for that opening crawl to this, you know, the movies from HBO. It was renamed to Max. They announced this week, our bad, HBO Max is now going to be HBO once again this summer. HBO Max.
Sazzy, it's HBO Max. Sorry. Like, whoops.
Sorry.
Our bad. Ridiculous. The memes that were all over social media yesterday were great. We had, I think, even HBO Max's own like Threads account posted about it in kind of a tongue-in-cheek way. But one of my favorite memes was the three Spider-Man pointing at each other. One said Max, one said HBO Max, and one said HBO Go. And like, do not forget the HBO Go app.
Listen, that was a whole other thing. Like, HBO had the service for subscribers to HBO on cable. They could log in and watch stuff digitally. But if you don't have an HBO cable account, we have this other thing for you to subscribe to. Then that all became HBO Max, right?
Which slowly staring at his hands, shaking his head, looking extremely depressed. I kind of love it.
You know what's great about this, though, is that this extremely boneheaded move that nobody could have predicted was a bad idea. The people in charge who actually made this decision, they're fine. David Zaslav, like, he is totally fine. He's untouchable. He's making, I think, believe over $50 million a year. all of his great decisions are just keep coming back and rewarding him. So
I don't forget. I don't folks. Understand. Yeah. Zaslav is a scourge on the content, TV, movie, streaming industry. The dude is out there just canceling movies left and right. Remember, Devendra, was it either the Batgirl or a Batwoman movie that was done? Yeah. And they're just like, nah, we're not releasing it. It was like, what? Like, in what? Like, this is like some, like overcomplicated scheme to, like, you know, recoup some taxes by claiming a movie is a loss. And it's just like, hey, just release the stuff. You know, like, let the people who are good at making the content just let them do their thing and then messing with them.
He came over from the whole, like, Discovery merger, I believe. Like, he is more of a reality TV guy. He is not a high-quality programming guy, which is why, like, I don't think he cared too much about changing, you know, removing the
I love the way you just said this guy has awful taste.
He does have awful taste. You said and it made him a lot of money and very influential, unfortunately. Yeah.
I just want to point out that in the article written by our writer, Andre, this is Max's second renaming in 3 years. It's some people in our chat are also making extremely good comments, which is Brandon Styles says in 2029 HBO will rebrand to HBO Pro Max, and Declan followed up with HBO Max Ultra will have fewer movies and TV shows because Ultra means thinner. Tom Rogers says next move HBO Minimum. It's just ridiculous. Paradise says they did it just so people would talk about them. Do you think that's true?
I think they definitely saw consumer confusion. I think they saw people wondering, like, where the heck is my HBO stuff? Because there was an older audience into this, too. Do not forget that HBO Max, when it launched, was also a disaster. Like, it crashed. It was not a smooth launch. They didn't have a lot of content.
Game
it was
of
a
Thrones
huge
was
mess,
way too dark.
Too. Yeah, well, that's a different thing, for other reasons. But, yeah, there were many, many issues. And, essentially, they had to, like, rebuild the streaming platform a little bit anyway. So, like, the rebranding kind of came alongside that. Anyway, HBO Max is back, folks. The one to watch for HBO once again this summer. Let's see what David Zaslav will screw up next. In one fun story that we saw, it turns out scientists found that lead really can be turned into gold. The alchemists were right. You just need help from the Large Hadron Collider. And they only did it for a fraction of a second. This is true transmutation, something people have been exploring for thousands of years. For a fraction of a second, it was possible.
Alchemist stone, baby.
Yeah, yes. You know, let's go full metal alchemist over here. Just be careful who is next to you when you transmute things. Let's move on to what's around in gadget. Sherlyn, you want to talk about Chris's TikTok story?
I just think it's a funny story about TikTok adding in an AI-powered image sort of video feature.
And
she tried it out. It's an image to video feature. Basically, you can feed it pictures and it'll just generate a clip out of it. And she tested it out on her cat. It just did something weird to her cat. I like that. Like, right, you can just write the straight story. However, it turned her cat into this, I don't know what you would call it,
animated cat
style. But it became a biped cat, right? It's like a running.
It turned into a furry.
Oh my gosh.
It turned into a furry running, and then it's a cat with wine glasses.
Chris posted the full thing on the article. The videos are there. They're hilarious. They're a beautiful, like a Friday unwinding sort of thing to play around with if you have TikTok, and or if you don't want to use it yourself, you can watch the videos on our site.
It's horrifying. Like a lovely picture of your cat's walking to you, turns into a full-sized man. Like, this is a furry dream or a nightmare to the people
feet.
Who hate furries standing on 2 feet.
I would just be really careful about watching AI generated stuff on social media. I watched one AI generated thing of look at these, we use AI to, convert Dragon Ball Z characters into, a real-life casting.
My
whole YouTube feed is that. Yep. And I was like, okay, I'll never make that mistake.
I think you can, you can delete your history with that video, Sam, so you it doesn't.
Remove
it's just, I just realized as soon as I'd done this, I had already dug myself into, extra work, and I was like, I don't need
that. So this is the TikTok AI Alive feature. It will animate your photos for you. To your point, Sam, one of the best users of AI I think I saw was, and I'm sure you guys have seen this too, someone used AI to reimagine the whole Titanic movie, except for seeing them as Gen Z people instead, which is wild. They actually used almost photorealistic characters based on Kate Winslet and Leonardo DiCaprio's faces. It's quite cool.
It's every time somebody shares that stuff, I'm like, it's very much like, oh, it's cool that you're doing that. Don't show me any of this stuff. Don't show me any of it. As like interesting as it seems to you, Sam. You did a hands on with the Lucid Gravity, which you're calling the coolest 3-row EV on the market. It's beginning to become a crowded market, like with Rivian out there, with more companies kind of doing it. The EV9 is out there. How did you like this one?
And that's one of the reasons why I kind of like the Gravity, because the Rivian is like, you know, very much an off-roady sort of thing. And Lucid actually says that like the Gravity does have some like off-road capabilities, but I like it because, you know, I live in the city and, you know, it just feels like really buttoned up, and it's like, it's a really long car, but because you have stuff like optional rear wheel steering and stuff like that, it drives really well. It has standard air suspension, nice. But there's, you know, can get an upgraded version if you pay for that too. And it's one of the nicest ride qualities I've ever been in on any car, EV or gas. And it just like, you know, it's got, it just makes really uses good, makes really good use of space.
Uh-huh.
The frunk, you can buy an optional pad that turns it into basically a love seat, but then it also folds into like a grocery kind of organizer when you're not using it, you know, sitting in it. They just done like a really good attention to
it's
detail.
Really big. Yeah.
The panel roof goes all the way into the windshield, so you just look up. Even, you know, a lot of cars the glass roof, for the driver, you can't see much.
Oh,
not on the Lucid Gravity.
This is heaven. Just, this is like future car to me. So there's no separation between your roof and your windshield.
Yeah. And so it's just like, it's really, you know, both the front and the second row seats are heated. And so, you know, they did a really good job, and I just think it's a nice looking car. There is some like weird boomer design tendencies, where like there's a little bit too much shiny chrome. And
did
the colors.
Boomer design tendencies?
Oh yeah.
Go look at the colors. The colors are black, kind of, yes. Silver,
my uncle's car,
dull olive, and like brown bronze. And it's just like give me some a decent selection of colors besides just like white and black and olive green.
That sunroof picture of yours, Sam, where you added the beautiful caption of the sky was cloudy that day. Just ace work.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the big issue is that this thing, at least the initial model that's on sale right now, the Grand Touring spec, starts at around $95,000. So it's definitely very expensive. going forward, there's going to be, you know, the regular Touring spec is going to be closer to about $80,000 to $85,000. But until Lucid finally comes out with their kind of mid-size SUV, they're not going to really, you know, get a lot of that mainstream love in the way that I think the company would like to have, just because they're trying to ramp up volume and production and stuff like that.
You say don't call it a minivan, Sam, but I look at this thing and I look at how long it is. This is a goddamn minivan. This is a minivan. What are they? So they're kidding themselves.
You were not the first person to call this thing a minivan, and I would not blame anyone else for calling it a minivan too. The only thing it doesn't have is sliding doors,
which is better.
It is really long. It has 3 rows. Yeah, absolutely.
Just fully accept it, man. Fully accept what you are. Be a minivan, because those actual sliding doors are great. Rather than big ass.
I wanted to call this thing the coolest minivan on the road right now. And Lucid is like a little, you know, and I think all our makers to a certain extent are a little touchy about calling something a minivan.
Sure.
Just because, you know, minivans just kind of have a bad rap. You know, you get that like, you know, stereotype of, oh, it's the soccer wagon to take the kids to practice, whatever. And so, you know, I also forgot to mention this thing has, I think it's 840 something horsepower as a 0 to 60 time of 3.4 seconds. That's faster than a lot of supercars, straight up.
That is wild. I know a
definitely
lot of people
go check out like Sam's piece for the photos that have the colors.
The photos are very good.
Paradise
it also has
our iPhone Pro
450
colors.
Mile range, one of the highest ranges of any EV, and it has the fastest charging of any EV outside of China. So it really, I really feel like Lucid has kind of put it all together. I think it looks nice. It drives incredibly. It's super fast and it's got great range. And so, you know, what's the biggest knock against EVs is that they're not good for road trips. That is clearly not true with the Lucid Gravity.
It's a cool car. It is a dream car to many people I know. Some people I know who own Rivians are still drooling after this thing. I'm like, shut up. You have an R1S. You're not allowed to to drool after another EV. Real quick, too, Just Conda did a preview for FBC Firebreak. This is the sort of this is a co-op shooter in the world of Control, the Federal Bureau of Control. Looks really cool. She's calling it Controlled Chaos, and it just needs a bit of polish, even though it's a lot of fun. I, as somebody who's obsessed with Control, I love Control. I love Alan Wake 2. I love everything Remedy has been doing. This looks really cool. Although I don't know if it needed to be a co-op shooter, but I guess, sure, that's what people are playing now. Sure, people are playing co-op shooters. It looks cool. That's all I have to say. Let's move on real quick to a piece of listener email. Wes from Dallas-Fort Worth, thank you so much for sending this. It's a bunch of questions about the Switch 2. I will say this to anybody sending in questions. We cannot predict what companies do. Like, we don't send us questions related to things that could be knowable or, guessable, I guess.
We've reported on.
I mean, we're always going to try our best to answer your questions, but some of the information just is not out there.
So some things we just can't answer. Some things, listen, I ask, when we talk to these companies, we ask them these very obvious things, and Nintendo, Apple, a lot of these folks are very weird, and they just don't say things to you. Like, they will not admit certain things. So Wes had a couple of questions. Can you connect better quality cameras to it, like the Insta360 Link 2? I don't know. I think because the Nintendo camera is USB, I had seen some reports that maybe other webcams could be supported. Certainly not the tracking that's in the Insta360. What's up, Sam?
So definitely there are going to be multiple camera options besides just the, first party Nintendo camera. There was one, I can't remember the manufacturer, but there's a camera that works with the Switch 2 that looks like a piranha plant. That's mm-hmm, really cool. Mm-hmm. And so there are going to be other options. It's just you're kind of have to wait until that kind of accessory ecosystem gets out there.
Yep. Also question about, can a microphone be used for better audio quality because it has two extra USB ports? We don't know. We don't really know until we start seeing these things. I don't know if they mentioned it, Sam, but also...
Yeah, I think theoretically that there's nothing that would stop the Switch from accepting a third-party microphone. Same thing for a wireless mouse and keyboard. I think that support technically is there. It's just whether, Nintendo will approve that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can a hub or dock be used to connect multiple devices? Nintendo has not said this, but this is not how Nintendo works when it comes to Switches or other things like that. Do multiple people in a living room playing together, do they each need their own cameras? From what we saw from the footage, it looked like it was splicing up camera footage.
So, yeah, I actually have an actual answer for this. If you're playing in a room with multiple people and you have like a single Switch 2 camera, you only need one camera.
Good.
So that camera can track multiple people at the same time. And what they do is like kind of they track your face and they do a cutout and they kind of superimpose that into the game itself. So you only need one camera.
Some of the footage they showed was super grainy. Like, it looked really bad, but it was because they were taking a fairly low res camera and just like chopping it up. So that wasn't too surprising.
Yeah, and that was sort of my experience at all. You can see the kind of like individual pixels. You can see how it's getting like digitally enhanced and stuff like that. But you do only need one camera for that.
Yep. They also ask, can external SSDs be used to store games? I don't know what they said about external storage, Sam.
I don't think so, but that this is still yet to be confirmed.
Yet to be confirmed. It would be interesting if you could just like have storage connected to the dock, and when you dock it, you'll have those games, and when you're handheld, you don't have those games. That would be nice, and certainly the tech is there to do it. Mario Paint 2. Wes is also asking, yes, wouldn't we all love to see Mario Paint 2? They have a freaking mouse. If you remember, Mario Paint 2 right. came in that big box.
The Joy-Cons mouse. Can be used as mice. I think a Mario Paint 2 is a slam dunk. They haven't officially said anything, but I'm pretty sure it's going to happen.
Do it, Nintendo. Like, they shipped Mario Paint with a mouse for the Super Nintendo, and that thing was terrible to use, but I had so much fun with it. So
They even gave you a plastic mouse pad that was one of the worst mouse pads ever made. I had one and I hated it.
I remember.
Hey, speaking of the SSDs question for the Switch 2, I just want to point out that, because it made me think, like, do you need storage on your game? I recently fired up my Switch 2, don't have a Switch 2, sorry guys. But like, it updated and it's doing the virtual game cards thing. And I don't know if that means what that means for the storage. It does mean that like you have to download
games
downloaded.
Again. It's all downloaded. Yeah.
Yeah. So I can see why the SSD would be helpful. However, I do want to point out that if you come back to Engadget.com either tomorrow or over the weekend, we will probably have some kind of tutorial on virtual game cards. I know that it's been, frustrating for some people, but it's quite like I don't know. I linked it to a Switch that wasn't mine. I linked my account to a Switch that wasn't mine and then came back and was like, where did all my games go? So yeah. I was quite upset. I couldn't play Overcooked on my own anymore. It's really upsetting.
They need to rework that whole system of like primary and secondary Switches and everything. But anyway, thank you, Wes, for the question. Hopefully we answer what we could. There will be more answers soon as like coverage into the Switch 2 happens, as more people get to play with it. I think I just saw... What was it? The Digital Foundry, I think, had more details about the actual hardware behind the Switch 2. So, you know, stuff is being revealed over time. Ask us more questions, folks. podcast@engadget.com. And if you have a question that you just want to send to Ask Engadget, is it, what is that, Trillian?
It's ask@engadget.com.
So there's two emails that you get to us. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also, hopefully everyone who wanted to pre-order a Switch got one. I did not. Devendra, I don't know how lucky you were.
I did not. So who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? We shall see. And also, I will say, we will accept audio questions for the podcast. And that would actually
send
be
a voice memo.
Better. Send a voice memo. Hold that sucker close to your phone or to your mouth and just talk right into it. You will get good quality that way. I'd love to hear voice questions as well. Let's move on real quick to what we're working on. I'm working on a bunch of stuff. Sherlyn, anything you wanna highlight?
Yeah, just keep coming by to Engadget.com. I am working on an accessibility-related Ask Engadget story, I believe. And then testing out some Nike Hyperice recovery boots. Hoping to write that up this week. I might not be able to because it's been incredibly intense a couple of weeks. So
and it won't and then, stop. Yeah.
Yeah, it won't stop.
Sam, anything for you?
You know, working on the S25 Edge review, and then I'm going to follow it up with a review for the Moto Razr Ultra, because like kind of like I said before, I think those two devices have more in common than people might necessarily think at first. So I really want to, you know, kind of do a compare and contrast to see which kind of like thin compact phone it makes the more compelling case.
Very cool. Very cool. Let's move on real quick to pop culture picks. Trillian, you said you have some surprises for us.
I have some good surprises. I said I was playing on my Switch, not the Switch 2. I truly do not have it. recently, my partner was recovering from surgery. And so boys will be boys and they enjoy very specific games. I will like to shout out this very... Like my toddler cousin would have loved this game. It is called Bus Driving Simulator on Nintendo Switch. Sam immediately facepalmed. The partner enjoyed it. You can drive a bus around Dubai. You can drive it around London or Shanghai. Anyway, very realistic sounds, very realistic like setup. I really enjoyed it myself, even though I'm actually really bad at driving it. And it's also a really quick way to see how it feels to drive on the left side or the right side of the street in different places. It's just that realistic. It was very confusing for me, the turnings. And I also crashed into a lot of cars and people.
I feel like that game is very, it's perfect for you, Sean, because you love to play monotonous games where it's just like, you're just staring at the screen.
I told Sam this because we were starting out by playing Overcooked and it was just not going how I wanted. As you can tell, Overcooked is a conflict heavy game. But anyway, I also have another surprise recommendation. This is a TV show and it's actually being released right now in like the weekly episodes on Apple TV Plus. It is called Long Way Home. A series featuring Ewan McGregor riding his motorbike with his best friend, Charlie Borman.
You do love your British men, Sherlyn.
He's Scottish. Ewan. But Charlie
Scotland
is
part of Britain.
Yeah, technically Britain.
The accent is quite different.
Very predictable.
So basically in this particular version of the Long Way series, which this is like, I think, the fourth installment. They're basically riding their bikes around Europe. But because it's not all out yet, we watched on Apple TV Plus as well, Long Way Down, which sees the pair of them, a lot younger, riding from the northern tip of Scotland. I forget the name. It's just three like English names. All the way down to Cape Town in South Africa. And on the way, they take a ferry. They basically do the entire ride on two wheels.
Wow. Their bikes rode on water. Amazing. Yeah.
Dude, it's just ridiculous. Not only the like motorbike journey of it and the like repairs and the trouble they went through, they can't ride really well in sand, etc., but also the people they meet and the stories they hear and the like UNICEF stuff that they do all through Africa. It was really eye-opening. So yeah, no, it's a documentary series that sort of a documentary series that I quite enjoyed. So yes, Kevin says Long Way Home is pretty old. I think Long Way Home is the new one. You're thinking Long Way Round, or Long Way Round was the very first one where they rode from England to New York, but east, which is why they called it Long Way Around. And then there's
That's
Long
a
Way
long
Up
ride,
and
England
Long Way
to New York.
Down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that was my two picks because okay. I don't need to save them anymore.
Okay. Sam, what do you got?
I'm still watching Andor, really enjoying it.
Strap in. What a season.
Everybody should be watching that.
Mm-hmm. But you're watching Andor season two, right? Or have you gotten to season
yeah,
two?
Yeah.
Okay.
Andor season two. I'm still kind of working my way through it, but yeah.
The definitely. Finale just hit. We republished the review I wrote of it. What a season of TV. What a jewel this thing is. And we'll probably never see
And
Star
I'm also
Wars like
trying to keep pace with the rehearsal.
Yeah.
Which is completely bonkers, but the lengths that Nathan, I can't remember his last name, goes through
Felder.
To like,
yep.
Nate Fielder goes to like really just go ham on a bit, even to like the most extreme conclusion. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the dedication.
It's great. Trillin, I feel like that's up your alley just in terms of how crazy it
goes.
Yeah,
people keep telling me to watch it for sure.
You should watch it and don't listen to anything. Don't read reviews. Don't read any discussions about it. Just go into it. For the full weirdness, I'm going to quickly shout out Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning. I wrote a review of this for us. I saw it at a screening earlier this week. I love this franchise. I love this franchise so much. On my movie podcast, we re-reviewed like all of the movies when they did the 4K upscale. I have to say I'm a little disappointed with this one, especially because it may be the end of the Ethan Hunt story. I will not get into spoilers here. But in the last movie, it was a mess because they made it amidst the pandemic. There's a lot of the main plot was against AI. They fully turned into science fiction. I think that was a huge mistake because it kind of just changed the stakes of what the series is doing. And this latest one is like, yeah, you got to stop the AI. And also now for some reason, Ethan Hunt is like the Messiah. Like he's the only person on Earth who can save us.
So
like
ridiculous.
There's a lot of stuff
Tom Cruise's alley.
Oh yeah, it absolutely is.
It is. But also, this entire series, he has at least challenged himself with directors who were good at like tamping that down. Like it was always a vanity project, but they were doing interesting stuff. There was teamwork.
Right.
It was about family. It was about hashtag family, really. This one is very much not that, but also there are some great stunts. There is some like great Mission Impossible level stuff here. It takes very long to get there. Yeah, takes
now very that long. Song's gonna be stuck in all your heads.
We're never gonna get back to like the greatness of Rogue Nation or Fallout or Ghost Protocol, and that's a damn shame. I just kind of miss that. So, yep. I mean, if you're a fan of the series, definitely check it out. It's definitely some of the best action filmmaking you'll see this year. But yeah, it's a shame. I'm disappointed.
Declan in the chat says Tom Cruise does have an AI quality to him.
He does. He does.
There you go.
Also, one thing, I'm going to ruin Tom Cruise, everybody. His tooth is in the middle. One of his front teeth is in the middle, very middle of his face. It's not like on either side. Like
the gap's not the thing in the middle, right?
Yeah, the gap is not dead center in the middle. So congratulations to everybody. I hope you look at Tom Cruise.
That may actually help his symmetry. That may help his symmetry. Like that's been his calling card for a while. But anyway, I think we can wrap.
Well, that's it for this week's episode, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Sam online at
Sam Rutherford on X, but I'm still waiting for people to tweet at me on Blue Sky, okay? Give me a reason to use Blue Sky.
What is it on Blue Sky?
You get to start talking, Sam.
Also at Sam Rutherford.
Just have conversations. Social on the screen. Yeah.
Devendra, where can people find you online?
At Devendra on Blue Sky, and also at the Filmcast at thefilmcast.com.
If you want to send me any of your like exciting motorcycle discoveries, I guess you can send them to me on Blue Sky. I'm at sherlyn.bsky.social, CHERLYNN. But I probably more easily findable on Threads, which where my username is CHERLYNNSTAGRAM, or just send us an email, you know. Speaking of, email us your thoughts about the show at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review wherever you're tuning in and subscribe on your favorite podcast platforms. And Tom Rogers is saying, I'm an assassin. Yeah, I kill vibes.